Hey guys, I'm back with another episode of the OT for Life podcast. Today, I've got Bryn Terry, a good friend and just all-around fantastic person and OT practitioner on the show. Bryn has her master's in occupational therapy and is currently pursuing her doctorate, having just finished up her first semester of the program. Bryn is also the founder of Be Well Balance, a website designed to promote health and wellness by empowering others to create their own lifestyle balance through meaningful engagement in occupation. Today's discussion revolves all around dealing with stress, managing your time, and maintaining a healthy balance within your life. So let's bring Bryn on and let her share how she strives to be well and balanced.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Hey, Bryn. Welcome to the show today. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me here. Things have been a little bit busy as I'm wrapping up my first semester of my OTD program, but it's all been good and fun.
I think you posted the other day that you've been writing like a paper a week.
Yeah. So the way that the program is set up, it's like we do one course at a time and each course is 7 weeks. And essentially we have an assignment due every single week, which is so far it's been in paper form. And I would say like on average, I'm writing like, they're not like massive papers, but it's still like 3 to 5 pages a week, which is a lot for me.
Yeah. That is a lot. Whew.
Yeah.
But fun, I'm guessing, in a sense.
In a sense, I definitely feel like I'm learning a lot more about different things that I hadn't necessarily learned about in the master's program. And then obviously it's a little bit more catered towards an area of practice that I'm interested in. So it has definitely been beneficial.
So wait a second. Hold on. You said your program, no, you said each semester is 7 weeks.
Yeah, so each semester is divided into 2 7-week periods.
2 7-weeks. Okay. Yeah. So then where are you right now? Because I can't do math in my head.
Next week, I will be done with my first semester. So I'll have completed 2 classes.
Got it. And do you feel like it's like ramped up? Like you're kind of at, you're closing out the semester and there's more happening right now? Or has it been about the same the whole way through?
Each week is basically like the same amount of work. It's not like there's one bigger assignment due at the end, because I think each course is really just designed to guide you through different things that you'll be doing for the actual OTD project. And since we're still pretty early on, we haven't necessarily done that much with the OTD project. So I'm sure once I start picking up more with that and developing my program, then it'll start to feel like more. But it's been pretty steady, I would say, for the most part. But I also was just told that these 2 classes that I finished were the heaviest in terms of caseload.
Oh, so. Okay. All right. So they're starting with a bang.
Yeah, because I think the way the program is set up is that there's 3 different matriculation periods. So some people might start, like I started in January, some people might start in May, and then others will start in like September or something. And then they just have the courses, like, I don't think they have every course running at each semester. So it's like, since I jumped in January, I was just taking the classes that were set for January, no matter what matriculation period you started in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay, mm-hmm. So kind of everybody, regardless, you're just getting thrown in at whatever they're doing.
Right. Huh. Yeah. So there's people in my classes that have already been in the program for a few months or so.
Okay.
From my understanding.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, because I was kind of thinking about it and thinking about some of the students that are out there that are potentially going through finals or about to start finals and papers and final presentations and like all that good stuff that tends to happen towards the end of the year, and feeling the time crunch and the demands of everything that you have to get done. And I know for myself, like I've been going through a very busy time period, not entirely sure why, but I've just had a lot on my plate. And I know a lot of like the school-based OTs, they're dealing with a lot of IEPs right now because it's the end of the year. And I feel like just across the board, everyone that I talk to, student or practitioner, everybody's been really, really busy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know. Like there's something in the air. There's something in the water. Like there's something going on right now.
Yeah. I can't say that I'm necessarily in that period right now. Thank goodness. But I've definitely been there before and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, oh man, I wish I was in your shoes right now because it's much better when you're on that side to then reflect
but
and be like
soon enough.
Hopefully. Yeah. But I'm curious because I know that you're really big into health and wellness and really having kind of this balance. And so I'd like to know initially, like, how do you define wellness?
So for me, wellness, I think there's a lot of different components that go into wellness and the physical component, the mental component, spiritual. There's also, if you look at different wellness models per se, there's like financial wellness, occupational wellness, which not to take away from occupational therapy, but occupational wellness in their sense means your job. So for me, wellness is just being able to find a balance between all of those things and being able to make sure, for me most importantly, that I'm feeling physically well and that I'm feeling mentally well. Because there's been periods of my life where it's like I've been focused on physical wellness, but I've kind of put the mental wellness to the side. And now that I've been through some things where, you know, my mental health is gone down in periods, that's now become more of a focus for me. And it's really just finding that balance between all the different dimensions of wellness.
I think it's really easy for a lot of people, and I definitely include myself in this, that it's easy for us to kind of brush aside areas that you're saying that encompasses wellness. And when we get stressed, our diet starts to kind of deteriorate, or you stop working out because you're so busy with stuff that you have to get done for school or stuff that you have to get done for work or maybe family demands. I think we forget that having this balance is really important, and we get so kind of focused and so honed in on whatever it is that is basically like attracting our attention at that moment. Then you just get caught up in this vicious cycle where everything just falls apart around you and crumbles around you.
Yes. And I've definitely had that happen to me before, and that there was one period of my life where I felt like everything was kind of crumbling, and I reached that breaking point where my mental health was so down and that was starting to impact my physical health. And you really start to realize that all these different components of wellness are so interrelated and all affect one another. So when one thing's going well, it's likely that all the other things are starting to go well too. But then once one thing, such as your mental health or physical health, drops off, then it starts to impact everything else. And so when I had that breaking point where I was super stressed, I was super anxious, everything else kind of started to fall out of place as well. And for me, that was really a wake-up call that I just needed to put more emphasis on myself and more emphasis on my personal health, rather than at the time all of my focus was on school and work.
What do you think, if you wouldn't mind sharing, what do you think led you to that breaking point? Like, what got you to the level that you are like, okay, stop, I need to do something?
So that's been something that I was always trying to figure out while I was going through that. And I still don't know that I've exactly pinpointed what it was, but I think just who I am. So growing up, I was always really active because I was playing competitive soccer year round, and then I was doing other sports on top of that. I was always very good about managing my time and balancing school with sports and then maintaining a social life outside of that. And I never really faced any significant stressors growing up. And so for me, I was getting by with managing my stress by just being super on top of all of my work, being very diligent about time management. And then I think at this point where I felt like I was good at balancing all those things because I was managing my time really well. And I still would say that I am good at managing my time. It was just the fact that there were all these extra stressors that were impacting me that because I never really had to deal with like chronic stress periods, I didn't know how to manage my stress at that time. And I'm the type of person where I'm very hard on myself. So when I wasn't performing as well as I like to be, then it was a lot of that negative self-talk going through my head, as well as just not being able to manage stress through effective stress management techniques. So I think that played a big role in it.
I feel like, yeah, like as you're talking, I'm like, yes, I'm totally nodding my head. I hear you. And I feel mm-hmm. like I'm the exact same way where I'm also really hard on myself. And I think it just takes a while and things build up. So initially it's like, right. I'm doing well. Okay. I'm adding this other responsibility or this other thing to my plate. All right. I got this. Okay. We're good. You're cruising. Life is good. And then something happens or you add something else or something changes and it kind of shifts that dynamic. And then you start to be like, okay, I'm struggling, but I still got this. Like, I'm good. And then all of a sudden you get to that point where it's like the point of no return, where it's already way too kind of down the rabbit hole of being stressed and exhausted and not sleeping and like everything else kind of falling to the wayside. And then you get, and I say you, me as well, you get really hard on yourself about, wait, how did I get here? I don't know how to get out of here. And then you start doubting yourself and you're like, I'm not performing optimally right now. I am not functioning how I typically function. And then that negativity almost gets thrown into that cycle right. too.
Yeah. So for me, it first started out as stress and like the physical symptoms of stress where, you know, my muscles started getting really tight and my back and my neck were always in pain. And then I started getting really bad headaches. And then I was just thinking like, am I just going to be like this for the next year or whatever? And then that stress quickly turned to anxiety about thinking about the future. And like, am I just going to be suffering through this mode of living all the time? And so it had just been that constant buildup with no real outlet for me, because I mean, I knew I could have been exercising more or meditating or, you know, doing those other types of stress management things, but it had already gotten to that point where it was too little too late.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the hard parts about being an OT and working in our profession, because we know what we should be doing. We know the theory behind it. We know the framework. We know the techniques that we should be utilizing to help us get out of this and get back to more of a balanced life and work-life balance and all of that good stuff. But yet, I know like at certain points, I know what I should be doing and I can't get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's exactly that. It was, for me, it was just super ironic because at the time I was pretty much telling my patients every single day, like, these are the things that you can and should be doing to manage your stress. And here I was, like, the most stressed out person I knew at the time.
It's like, practice what you preach, and you're right. preaching what to do, and then you're not yeah. doing it yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that made me feel worse, because I'm like, who am I to be telling these people, like, what they should be doing? And here I am, not doing it myself. And it wasn't because I didn't believe in it. It was just because life was getting the best of me at that point.
Yeah. And I think like what better way to have a little bit of like humility when you're mm-hmm. having these feelings as you're talking to these clients and these patients that are going through really difficult situations, and you almost get this connection where you're like, I feel you guys. I'm totally in your shoes. And these are things that have worked in the past, or I know I need to get better. Okay, maybe we can do this together. Like, let's work together on this. And you do what you need to do. And I'm going to try to implement this in my own life. But it's definitely a tricky situation. And I think one of the big things to highlight is that everybody deals with stress and deals with stressors, I don't know, maybe negativities in their life or things going differently than they thought they would. Anything that could be perceived negatively, that everybody deals with that differently.
And it's interesting because for me, it's like I realize that everybody has stress. Like everybody knows that everybody goes through stress, but I feel like it's not something that people really talk about how it affects them. And I don't know if that has anything to do with the reason why our nation, the stress levels are going through the roof. And there's just been so much talk about how stressed America is right now.
And I think kind of going back to what you were talking about in the beginning is like, there are so many things that play a role in causing stress for people, whether it is poor diet, whether it is lack of exercise, whether it is financial reasons, productivity at work, or maybe lack of purposeful work, health issues, like you name it, there are so many different things that all play a role into health and wellness. Quite frankly, it's one of those things that I think really needs to be on the forefront of what people are talking about. And a lot of times it's just shoved under the rug and people are like, oh, it's fine. I'll get through it. I'll be fine. And it's not until they get to this breaking point when people are like, oh, something needs to be done.
Right. And I think for my personal experience or through my personal experience, my biggest takeaway was that these stress management strategies aren't just things that you implement when you start to feel stressed. It's something that needs to be really integrated into your daily and weekly routines so that you're able to kind of lower your baseline and lower your reactivity to stress in the first place. So that has been something that has, I felt like now that I've gone through this and I've changed my habits, I think that it's something that has helped me profoundly.
I'm going to take a minute. I want to highlight what you just said there, because I think it's a really, really powerful statement. Because I think so often people get stuck, and then they're trying to, when they're in these kind of emotionally fragile states because of all the stressors that are happening, they are trying to figure out what to do. And that's not necessarily the time that they should be figuring it out, because they're not at that mental clarity. They're not at their like 100% optimal functioning level. And I was actually just having this discussion with Brock Cook from the Occupied podcast. We just did a live the other day and we were talking about it. And a lot of times I feel like when I get kind of in these downward spirals, because I know what I should be doing, I'm like, okay, I should start meditating, or I should start journaling, something that I don't typically do. But I feel like I need to be doing something that I haven't really implemented into my daily routine at all. And then it almost becomes a chore. It becomes something else that then you stress because you're not doing it, or you can't do it, or it's not helping, or whatever it is. And point being is like trying something new when you're in that, I want to say confused state, when you're in that just funk.
Dysregulated.
Yeah, there we go. Dysregulated. There we go. Yeah, it's like it almost doesn't help you. It makes it worse.
Yeah, because it's something that you're thinking like, oh my gosh, I need to be doing this. Otherwise, it's not going to get better. And then you're constantly thinking about it. And I think it kind of adds to the anxiety, or like you said, the stress of having another thing that you have to check off your to-do list.
And yeah, so I think like having the awareness of when you are not in that state, be testing some things out to that you think might help you. So then you kind of already have these tried and true methods when you are in a good mental state, and a manageable stress level state is better than trying to do all these things when you are at the bottom.
Right. And obviously it's optimal to try those things before you reach the bottom. But at the same time, once you are going through that state of dysregulation, I think it's still, if you don't have anything to begin with, it still is important to try some things, because if you continue to do nothing at all, then obviously like that's not going to help either. And an example for me was when I was going through that state, I don't know what made me do it, but I think it was kind of just thinking with my OT brain, like, oh, I need to start engaging in occupation. Mm-hmm. So I actually just randomly decided I'm going to buy some paintbrushes and some art supplies. And I actually started watercoloring during that time. And I found that to be really helpful for me, because it was something that was super easy to do. I'm not saying I'm like an artist of any sort, but the actual act of, you know, the process of watercoloring is really easy. And it just allowed me a moment to sit down and just paint whatever I felt like painting. And for me, like, it was fun. So it wasn't necessarily something that I was like, oh, I need to do watercolor to decrease my stress sort of thing. But it was just a new thing to try out.
I agree. I feel like for me, because I'm still kind of in this non-optimal state at the moment and been dealing with a lot of stress, what I decided to do was pick one thing to focus on. So rather than, okay, I need to eat well, I need to get a lot of sleep, I need to exercise, I need to do this, I need to do that, like rather than overwhelm myself with responsibilities, I was like, I'm going to pick one thing and focus on that at least for a week. I'm going to try to do it a little longer, but I'm going to focus on that for a week. And the thing that I picked initially was exercising. And I just said, you know what? Every day I want to get at least 30 minutes of exercise. If that's going for a walk, if that's doing a little like insanity video, if that's doing some weights or going for a run, whatever it is, that's what I'm going to focus on. And I picked that for me specifically because I know that giving myself some time to try to not think about whatever it is that is stressing me, try to get into that kind of flow state by doing an exercise, which would be the same thing that you would be going through, like doing watercoloring, just trying to get into that flow state. And then knowing that by getting some exercise, that should, it might not, but that it should help me sleep a little bit better, and it should help me try to get my diet on track. So it was like, I picked one hoping that it would have an effect on the others, but focusing just on that one.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the idea of keystone habits, where it's like, if you can form one habit with, for you as physical activity, it translates into other areas of your life as well. Being physically active would ultimately help you start eating better and sleeping better and things like that. So that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I know. I was like, I had just gotten to that point. I'm like, I need to do something. I don't know what it is, but I need to do something. And I actually think it was from the Instagram live that we were doing that it was mentioned. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to pick one thing and I'm going to focus on that. And hopefully then that can lead to focusing on something else and then trying to get me back on track. But so far I'm a couple days into it and it's definitely helping. still dealing with stuff, but it is helping.
Yeah. And it's not always like that immediate effect. And sometimes I feel like that's what discourages people from believing in it and maintaining it. But once you get it into your routine, like you realize what the effect of it is and how much it really helps.
Completely. Yeah. What do you feel are like some other ways that can help people manage stress a little bit better or kind of find some balance within their life?
So for me, physical activity is also really big. And when I was at that low point, I didn't really have the motivation to go like do an intense workout, but I knew I could walk. And I knew like that was an easy thing for me to do. So I just started out by going on longer walks. And for me, I feel like nature has a really big impact on my mental state. So as much as I could, I would walk outside and go on hikes and do that. Nature is kind of like my best form of therapy. I also try to make a point to practice mindfulness. And for me, it sometimes means meditation, but it doesn't always have to mean meditation. I think when I feel like really, really stressed, that's when I'll turn on a guided meditation and really practice deep breathing. But kind of in the day-to-day moments, if I notice that I'm a little bit more tense, then I'll just sit and do a few deep breaths, or I'll, you know, go on a walk and I'll pay particular attention to all of my surroundings. I won't have any music playing or anything, just so I can, you know, listen to everything around me, because mindfulness really is just about being aware of the present moment that you're in. So I feel like that has really helped as well, especially with anxiety for me. I used to just like have these continuous thoughts of, you know, the negative thinking spirals. And now it's more of like, okay, I noticed I had that negative thought and I noticed I'm feeling anxious. How can I stop this negative thought? And how can I just accept that I'm feeling anxious in this moment, but also know that it will pass, because it always ends up passing.
I heard a while back that we have like thousands and thousands of thoughts every single day. And like that, okay, I get it. Like, yeah, we're constantly thinking about things. But what really hit me is that when you introduce the word negative, so if you mm-hmm. have thousands of negative thoughts per day, and just by having that negative thought, it will like decrease your mood. It will make you feel more stressed. Like it already has like this downward effect on you. And especially if it's like, I mean, you are the one having these thoughts. And so it's like what you are kind of putting on yourself, or potentially putting on others, when you are projecting your thoughts onto other people. And it's one of those things that I try to, when I have like these negative thoughts, rather than be saying, well, I'm so bad at this, trying to reconfigure and reshape, shift that mindset and not mm-hmm. make it negative, and try to make it positive, or maybe put like a more of a growth mindset on it of like, this is something that I need to work on, rather than I'm terrible at this.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
I wanted to jump back a little bit on the meditation piece, because I've done a little bit of it. I'm not like super well versed in meditation or even guided meditations, like anything like that. I have done a few, and when I did them, I really liked them. But it's one of those things that I really haven't been able to integrate into my life. I think for those of us that are like me, that have either not done it or haven't done it enough to really see the value and believe in it quite yet, what are ways that you feel like people can start testing it out? I've heard about the app Headspace, and I've heard about some of these other things that a lot of people talk about, but I don't know. I've never really been able to kind of take that step. Do you have any tips or any advice for somebody wanting to dabble in meditation but not really knowing how to start?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm by no means an expert on meditation, and I use the Headspace apps, and I actually pay a fee for it because I felt like it was worth it. But I think like the biggest thing is to start slow. So I started off by setting aside literally just 3 minutes a day, because I think that's the lowest amount of time you can choose on it. And even now, like I still max probably only do like 10 minutes a day. And I think one of the biggest barriers that people face with it is they think that while you're meditating, you have to be able to control your thoughts and really kind of stop your thoughts so that you're focusing solely on the stillness and the meditation. But when I'm meditating, I still have thoughts going through my head, and it's really just being able to notice, like, oh, I have this thought going by and I'm just going to let it continue to pass, and then refocusing on the breath again, because then that allows you to shift your mindset from the thought to the breath. So that's what really helped me. And I think another big thing is that people think they can't find time to do it, because it's like, we're so busy, who has time to sit for, you know, even a few minutes doing what seems like nothing to them. So, I mean, I'm lucky right now where I don't have like a super crazy work schedule. And because I'm doing schoolwork, I have the ability to kind of define my own schedule. But to make it a habit for myself, I would just do it the first thing in the morning. And some things that I had talked about before with my clients when I was trying to help them to integrate meditation into their routine, if that was something that they wanted to do, it was like, where are little pockets throughout the day that you can find even just 3 to 5 minutes to do that? And so someone who was a mom and was like, I can't do it at home because my kids are always going to be bothering me. It's like, could you do it the first thing you do when you get in the car to go to work, where there's not going to be anyone else around you? Or do it the last thing you do at the office before you leave, when you've kind of shut everything down already. And so she found that doing it last thing of the day after she had, you know, wrapped up her emails, and she even had like a little reminder pop up on her screen to remind her to stop and do some meditation before she left. That's what worked for her.
I think a lot of times, and I totally am I'm one of these people, and I'm working on it as well, I find myself saying, I don't have the time. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. I can't go for a walk. I can't exercise. I can't respond to that email. I can't write that paper, whatever it is, because I don't have time. And I was listening to an audiobook, and it's called 168 Hours. You have more time than you think. And they were talking about how everybody has the same amount of time. Right? Like, Bryn, you don't have more time than I do. I don't have more time than you do. We all have the exact same amount of time. And it's how we prioritize our time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to make the difference. And I think in today's society, it's so easy, and we get so wrapped up in making sure that we do all of our things for other people, for our boss, for our professors, for our clients, for our families, for our friends. Like, we're always so focused on making sure that we attend to everybody else's needs before ourselves. And really, for me, what kind of started to like help with my focus was I was realizing that I was trying to do my stress management. I was trying to do the things for me at the end of the day, and I was tired. I didn't have the motivation, and I just didn't want to do it at that time. And what ended up working for me was that I started waking up earlier, and I started setting my alarm for 30 minutes earlier every morning. And all of a sudden I shifted, and I focused on me first before I started to focus on everything else that I had to get done. And I noticed such a powerful impact that it had, because all of a sudden it wasn't, oh, I've done all of this for everybody else today and I have nothing else to give to myself. It was, I've already, quote unquote, I've already paid myself today. I've already given myself me time. Now I can focus on everybody else. And at the end of the day, I've already accomplished what I needed to do. And that was huge for me. And I know, like, right now I'm not doing that. And so that's one thing, like, it's totally not helping me right now. But I know that that's something that I need to get back to. And so I like what you are saying about figuring out when works for people. For your client, it was right at the end of the workday before she got home. For me, it's like first thing in the morning. For some people, it could be the last thing they do before they go to bed. Or maybe it has to happen sometime in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. But really finding where that kind of like clutch point is for what's going to work for you and what's going to accomplish the goal that you want.
Yeah. And I think that is the most important point you bring up, because I mean, taking it back to meditation, you also have to realize that meditation isn't necessarily for everyone. And so if you're trying to force something that you really just don't want to do, then it's not going to work out for you. And maybe you can find, you know, a different form of stress relief that kind of resonates better with you. But I also think, yeah, that finding that right amount of time is going to be different from person to person. And it's important that you figure out what is best for you within, you know, the 24 hours that you have in the day.
I want to pull in a quote that you posted on Instagram a couple days ago, or maybe a couple weeks ago, but I love this quote, and I've heard it in kind of different iterations before, but it basically said that you can do anything, but not everything.
Yes.
And to me, like, that is such an important thing to reflect on, because mm-hmm. we as students, we as practitioners, we as people, we have so much going on at any given moment. And there's so many things that we can say yes to. There's so many things that we can do. But oftentimes, that is what ultimately leads us to becoming stressed and kind of getting into these like negative spirals. Mm-hmm. And really starting to kind of realize, like, what are your priorities? What's important to you? And what is it that is something or some things that you have to do? And what are some things that maybe you don't have to do right away, or you can kind of put on the back burner until you have a little bit more time or you have a different focus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that this is also where kind of the power of no comes in as well. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you may be asked to do some things, but sometimes you just have to look at everything else that you have on your plate and really take a look at how you are feeling and if you feel like you're able to manage it at that time. And as much as, you know, it's important to say yes to opportunities and yes to stepping out of your comfort zone, I think it's also, you really have to look in the long run, like, is it going to be beneficial to you? And yeah, it all comes back to prioritizing, like, what are your values? What are the things that maybe you don't want to do, but you still have to do it because it's your obligation? But literally going through all the things, all the different tasks that you have on your plate and looking at what are the things that you have to do? What are the things that you want to do? And what are some of the things that maybe you can say no to, or maybe you can delegate to someone else to do? And I think this whole idea of taking on too much has been something that I have struggled with.
You and me both.
Yeah, I think like one of my greatest fears in life is disappointing other people. And so I always want to say yes to everything that people ask me to do, whether it's at work or with friends. And I think one of the things that really led to my negative spiral was feeling like I had to do all the things in the week with work to stay on top of things and even like get ahead as much as I could, but then also filling my weekends with activities because I felt like I needed to have a social life as well. And I'm not saying that you should say no to everything on the weekends in order to like make your week go by better, but it's all about finding that balance of saying yes to the things that you want to do. But then if my friends invited me to go out and I didn't really want to go, but I kind of was experiencing that FOMO, I didn't need to say yes in that moment because in the long run, that was something that ultimately wore me out.
Yeah, I heard that every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. Again, it's going back to kind of shifting that mindset and realizing that it's not that you're just saying yes to everything because you're this amazing person and you can get it all done, but everything you say yes to means that something else you're going to have to say no to at some point. Mm-hmm. It might not happen right away, but at some point you're going to find yourself being like, I literally can't do something that I really want to do because I have said yes to all these other things and I've committed my time to other places. The power of saying no is massive. And I think it is just so important for people to start to understand that just because you take and take and take and take and take on all these things doesn't mean that like you're a better person for it. I just think that the power of saying no is really, really, it's just such an important skill to have. It's difficult. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, like it was really hard to, it still is. I can't even say that I'm that great at it at the moment, but it's a skill that I'm constantly working on. It's a skill that I'm constantly trying to improve upon. Also realizing when it is important for me to say no, so I can focus on other things that are going to add value and add some meaning to get me kind of back on track, especially mm-hmm. when I'm kind of going through these difficult time periods. It's hard. And I literally just went through this with my husband like last weekend. And I told him, I'm like, I can't go out tonight. I have to work on these other things because otherwise it's going to have such a negative impact on the rest of my weekend. And then starting the week. And he was so disappointed with me because this had been planned and I was like backing out last minute. But I knew like in my heart, I'm like, I have to say no right now so I can work on all these things. And so later on, I can say yes to something. I just can't say yes right now.
And I really like that perspective that you brought in about every time you say yes, you're saying no to something else. And that kind of reminds me of that whole, like, you can't pour from an empty vessel sort of thing, where it's like, if you're always saying yes to other people's needs and not saying yes to your own needs. So when you're saying yes to other people's needs, it's like you're saying no to your own needs. Mm-hmm. Then you're not taking that time to refuel yourself. And then once you're, you know, saying yes to all these different things, then it turns into this scenario where you're spreading yourself too thin because you don't have all of the energy or the resources or time to be able to give 100% to the different things that you've committed yourself to.
100%. I think too, going back to like this, the power of saying no and how important of a concept that is, mm-hmm. and that I found, especially in my life, there's also this other concept. And I know this has kind of been something that you posted about a couple days ago on Instagram, mm-hmm. and I immediately resonated with it because it's something that I've also been trying to implement in my life. It's not apologizing for yourself. It's not saying sorry. And the second that I saw your post, I was like, oh my goodness, I have to write to you. I have to tell you because it's something that I realized I was doing a lot. Mm-hmm. I would say I was doing it daily, either a response to an email to somebody, saying it on the phone, in a text in person, like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm late. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't respond in time. Oh, I'm sorry, insert whatever reason here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why I was doing it because I was apologizing for me being me and for life happening. But I didn't realize until some reflection on it that just by doing that, I was already almost like succumbing to the negativity. And I was putting myself down to like help other people feel better about the situation. And yeah, it's such a weird kind of shift that you have to have. But again, I feel like OTs, we do this and we apologize for things that we do and we don't have to. There's no reason for it.
Yeah. And I tried looking into it a little bit and I don't know why we do it so much or why OTs do it so much. I also am pretty sure it's more of a female thing to do. But yeah, I was reading like, what are other ways that you can not say sorry, but what are other things that you can say instead of saying sorry? Because every time you say sorry, it almost like it reflects, like you were saying, like a negative perspective, and it almost sets like that negative tone. So if you're late to something or late sending something in, instead of saying sorry for the delay, you can instead rephrase it as like, thank you for your patience. And then it makes the receiver feel good because you're saying thank you to them instead of sorry. I mean, obviously there are scenarios where I think sorry is definitely appropriate.
Yes.
But yeah, I would say there are many of us who probably use it a little bit too much. It's weird because when I was reading about it, like the psychology behind it is because when you say sorry, you're perceived to be more trustworthy. So there is some benefit to it, but it's like, to what extent?
That's really interesting. It seems odd because why would that make you seem more trustworthy? For me, it's almost like a passivity where you are putting yourself below the other person. Oh, I'm sorry because I didn't do whatever it was that you were expecting me to do. And almost like bumping them up by belittling and kind of putting yourself down. And what I've realized is in my attempt to try to remove the I'm sorry, I found that, or sorry, I just did it. See? Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm going to have to keep that in because that's like, that's too perfect right there. So it is a work in progress, as you can tell. I still do it. But what I found in trying to remove the I'm sorry from my vocabulary, from my word bank, is that it's actually made me more assertive in what I'm saying. Rather than starting kind of at this low point and then getting to whatever it was that I need to communicate to somebody, I just start right there. And it's really helped me just state what's going on without any sort of negative aspect contributing to that text or conversation, whatever it is that I'm having at that moment.
And that's interesting too, just going back to what we had talked about before about like the negative thoughts in your head and how that ultimately contributes to, you know, how you feel as a person. But it's like every time you're saying sorry, you're bringing yourself down a little bit versus anytime you're assertively communicating, then I bet that's probably making you feel more confident.
Mm-hmm. You're like standing up for yourself rather than like, all right, I know I'm bad or I know I could have been better. It's like it kind of goes back to that comment that I made about being positive and having a positive thought rather than that initial negative response.
Exactly.
So I kind of want to talk a little bit about maybe some other tips, like, because I know we've been talking about managing stress and what to do when we're in these situations, but let's talk about some things that we could be doing all the time and tips for like staying organized and meeting our goals and maybe helping to not let us get to the bottom the bottom point and these low points to really kind of help us maintain a healthy balance within our lives.
Again, as we talked about before, in terms of managing stress, to get in the habit of doing, you know, whatever stress relieving things work for you ahead of time before the stress really sets in. And then I think it's also important to be self-aware and notice when you are starting to get stressed, then maybe amp up the stress techniques a little bit. But in terms of staying organized, something that really helped me, so most of my experience is school related, so I'll just talk on that. Something that really helped me throughout graduate school as well as undergrad was at the beginning of every semester, getting during syllabus week, going through all of my syllabi and writing out all the due dates for all the assignments in each class, writing out all of the midterms and finals dates. And when I say writing out, I mean writing into my planner, because then I would have a good understanding of what was coming in the near future and the far future. And then also because I was in a sorority and other clubs on campus, I would also add any social activities or club meetings into my calendar as well. So obviously I knew the things I had to do for school in terms of assignments and tests, but then there were also these other things that I wanted to do that were, you know, related to having a social life. And so I just made sure to always be very on top of things so that I could participate in the things that I wanted to do without having to be worried about, oh my gosh, I have this midterm next week that I haven't even started studying for because I didn't realize it was coming up so soon. Or, you know, getting a head start on a paper so that I wouldn't have to miss out on whatever social event was happening. And I think that that is something that has always been a part of me, that getting ahead of things. And, you know, in grad school, I could guarantee you most of my cohort probably knew that about me and would kind of jokingly make fun of me, being like, oh, Bryn's already done with that paper like 3 weeks ahead of the due date. They weren't always wrong, but yeah, I'm someone who, if I procrastinate, I get stressed out. And I think that that ultimately takes away from my performance. But with that being said, I think it's also important to know how you function, because there's also some people out there who do really well with procrastinating, where they perform better under the pressure and under that sense of urgency without getting too stressed out.
Yeah, that's important. What you said right there is that, yeah, that's gold. And I think that is just really important, because finding how you, and when I say you, like everybody, finding how you individually function and what works for you is going to be the best thing. Of course, you're kind of sharing some things that you've tried and things that work for you. I've shared some things that work for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean that things that we are talking about right now, it's going to work for everybody.
Right.
And I think it's really important just to highlight, you have to figure out what works for you specifically. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the best method to staying organized and managing your stress and maintaining that balance that we need in order to perform within our lives. And I really like that you said that you schedule things. For me, like what I try to do, well, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to get better at it, is blocking time off. And so typically I would like make a to-do list and I would just have this long laundry list of things that I have to get done. But then because I wasn't prioritizing, I wasn't making time for all, like I'd get some of the big things done or some of the things I wanted to get done, but then I wasn't actually accomplishing everything that I needed. And so what I'm trying to do now is actually like block off time in my schedule. Okay, I'm going to spend 30 minutes for this on this day. And that's all I'm going to focus on. And I'm going to spend 2 hours doing this on this day, basically allotting these times in order to focus on the things that have to get done. And so it's not just, oh, I have to do everything at every moment. It's like, no, right now, this is, for me, this is my podcast time. I have 2 hours on Tuesday morning that I'm focusing on my podcast. And on Wednesday afternoon, I am focusing on writing up evaluations for work or whatever it is. And so really planning ahead, blocking off that time. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, I have this time. Oh, I can be working on whatever it is that you would kind of put in that slot. And I think the other big thing that goes along with that is that it takes time to plan ahead. You have to sit down initially and get your syllabi from class or get your schedule from work and figure out specifically what it is that you have to get done per day, per week, per month, per year, like depending on how long of a runway you have when you get kind of all these responsibilities. And so it's taking time up front to then give you more time throughout the entire day or week.
Yes. And I like that you brought up the point about blocking out the time. So for me, like when I was in school and I had those allotted times for class, obviously that was something that I had to do. So that was the first thing that would go into, you know, my weekly schedule. And then I would work around that and block out some time. Like, this is the time I'm going to work out. I like don't care how much I don't want to do it at that time. Like, that's the time I'm going to do it. And then what I was also going to say is that if you can even like make time to do whatever self-care means to you, do some self-care. Or another strategy that I find helpful is if you think something is going to take an hour, like documentation or something, then you can even block out, you know, double time. So block out 2 hours for that, because generally things take longer than you expect them to. And then if you finish early, you have a chunk of free time to do whatever.
Yeah. As you were talking, I'm like, oh, yes, this is something really good. Tracking your time. I think initially you can plan, but sometimes we don't know at the beginning how long something will take. We might say, I have to write this paper. It should take me an hour, or it should take me 5 hours, or whatever it is. But you might not know initially how long that task is going to take. And so I'm going to say it, because then this means I'm actually going to do it. I've been talking about this forever. And I know my buddy Leo, he's going to be listening to this and he's going to laugh, because this is something we talked about months ago. And months and months ago, but actually like tracking our time and figuring out what we do within our day, and then how much time we are actually spending doing that task. And I know there's going to be things that I will see and it will actually be kind of eye-opening. I'm sure it's going to be eye-opening to be like, I spent X amount of hours on social media or something like that.
When Apple came out with that
notification,
I was like, oh my goodness. You know how it like shows you how much time you've spent? Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. I have not looked at it because I'm afraid to look at it. So, but I know other people that have used it and they'll post about it. And I'm like, oh.
Yes.
I don't know if I want to know, but I think it will be a good, I want to call it a game. I think it will be a good kind of challenge for me to really figure out where my time is going, so then I can better allocate to the things that need to be done and to the things that I want to do, and realize like I don't need to be spending however many hours on something that isn't adding the value that I like could be getting from something else.
Right. And that kind of speaks on the point that we talked about earlier, where, you know, we were saying people, they don't have the time to do something. And it's like, if you look at how much time you spend on social media, then you'll realize, oh, I do have, you know, a few extra minutes to meditate or whatever.
Television.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another one. I don't watch a ton of television, so it's not really something that I know I could actually be getting some time back from, but I know for other people that television could be a really big time suck.
Mm-hmm. And for me, like throughout the day, it's not that I'll be sitting on Instagram or whatever for hours at a time, but it's like the amount of times I just pick up my phone and go on it for even just like a few minutes, those few minutes add up to hours a day.
And like, weeks and months and oh gosh.
Yeah. But I do have a little sheet on my website that is like a time tracker sort of thing, where it's like, well, I mean, I guess you could do it just based on, you know, a 24-hour schedule, which I also have. But this one is like specific to like writing out a task that you are doing and then predicting how much time it will take, and then seeing how much time it actually takes, just that like you can get an idea of like, oh, I'm not as quick as I thought it would be.
Or I need to give more time to this task. Oh, but look, this one doesn't take me as long. All right, I don't have to give as much time to this task, but I need to shift it over here. And I will definitely link to that time tracker that you have on your website in the show notes. So if anybody wants to go kind of take a look at that, it will be in there. And I'm definitely going to go look at it, and maybe I'll add that into my little challenge and I'll use it and I'll get back to you on how it works for me. The other thing that I kind of just wanted to bring up briefly too, and this was something, again, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and this was a podcast I was listening to the other day. And I think it really ties in nicely to what we've been talking about, but they were talking all about timing, and not so much like time management per se, but noticing or realizing how the time of day impacts your function. And so recognizing some people are morning people, some people are night owls, some people, they peak in the middle of the day, or they, you know, they have these crashes in the afternoon or whatever it is. and then trying to align the tasks that need your full mental capacity for that task during the hours that you have the best amount of clarity and the best amount of ability to kind of grind out that task. And I thought that that was just such an interesting concept, because so often it's like, we just have to get it done when we can get it done. But as we're kind of talking about blocking out time and making time to accomplish all these things, also pay attention to when during the day it might be best for you to be doing those tasks.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because when you were talking about getting up earlier to work out or give yourself some me time, I was thinking like, oh, I love that idea, but that would not work because I'm not a morning person, and anything that requires me to get up earlier, I generally don't enjoy. So yeah, it's like, I've functioned better after a certain time, and even in the later hours of the night, not like super late. I also am someone that likes to go to sleep at a reasonable hour, but I mean, like, I'll be fine working at like 7 to 8 p.m. sort of time zone. But I think it's interesting too, because I feel like the corporate world is starting to notice that a little bit more, and they're starting to become more flexible with their working hours in terms of like letting, you know, employees come in later and then leave later, or, you know, work from home and work on their own time. But I would say it's probably a challenge in the health field.
Yeah, I like that you just kind of tied it back to healthcare, and especially to our profession, because we might be going in to see our clients when we are available and when mm-hmm. we are feeling good, but that might not necessarily mean that we're lining up when that client is ready for us, or when they are in the right mood to be doing whatever it is, especially if it's like in a hospital setting or pretty much any setting. You go in, you're like, okay, I'm here, this is our scheduled appointment. And they're like, yeah, I'm not having it right now. I can't even attempt to do what it is you want me to do, because I'm just not at that moment. I'm not at that place.
Right. And even so, for me, when I was at an outpatient clinic, it's like you're catering towards your client's needs. And for them, if they're at an outpatient clinic, that means they're coming in when they're not at work. So that means either earlier hours in the morning or later hours at night. That's another thing that you have to juggle as well on your end.
Definitely. And you as the clinician have to have that awareness of how you function, but then also have the understanding of where your client is coming from too.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that you just brought up your website, and so I'd love to give you a little bit of time to discuss kind of what's going on with that, because it's beautiful. The graphics and the colors, everything is absolutely amazing. Yeah. Why don't you share a little bit about what's going on with your website and maybe kind of what you're hoping to accomplish with it?
So basically, I started the website from my own personal experiences of realizing that throughout my education, I never received the basics around health and wellness. And within the US, there's just this huge, you know, mental health crisis, as they call it, within the college age group. And when you look at it, or when I was looking back at my experience, there's no sort of general education surrounding like physical health, stress management, you know, mental health, whatever. And so I kind of created it as a resource for specifically like college age students. But I mean, in reality, it's like, if you're not learning it in college, then when are you ever really learning it? So really, it can be kind of applicable to anyone. And I think there is like definitely more of an emphasis on this within college settings, because they're realizing what an issue it is. But at the same time, it's like, it still isn't necessarily integrated into the culture or integrated into the general education curriculum. It really still counts on students seeking out either the specific classes that offer it or seeking out the specific resources on campus. And I think in terms of like nutrition and physical activity, like there's a little bit maybe more students using those resources, but in terms of mental health with the whole like stigma surrounding it, it was kind of like my personal situation of like you're not seeking help until you realize you really need it. And so I kind of just wanted to create this kind of from my own experience in order to give back and help others have some resources that, you know, they can access rather easily and online, so they don't have to worry about like going to wherever it is on campus that offers it. Because that's another issue, is that a lot of these campuses offer these resources, but students don't know about them.
Yeah, it's awareness. It's having the understanding that there are things, there are resources out there that can help you. And I think generally as a society, at least in the past, it is, this is how things are done and you have to do it. Specifically, like when we're talking about a college setting, these are the papers, these are the tests, these are what you have to do to pass. And you do whatever you have to do in order to accomplish that. And the mental health aspect of college life and transitioning to college life from living at home with your parents and moving, you know, into the dorms or moving into an apartment and going through all of these kind of life changes that happen with college, I feel like we're just thrown into, and it's like, okay, now you have to do all of this and you have to adjust to all of this and go. And people are just like, right. Wait, what? Like, hold on, like what's going on? And it's one of those things that isn't talked about enough, I don't think. And understanding the impact, positive and negative, that mental health can have on a person and potentially multiple people in a society in general. And so I'm so enthused and so excited about your website, because I feel like it's really filling a need that so many college students and just people in general need to have access to. And they need to have that awareness of there are resources and, you know, there's evidence to kind of back up some of the things that can be utilized to help people go through transitions, go through stressful time periods, manage their time better, kind of all of these topics that we have addressed today.
Yeah, and it's definitely something that I would like to continue building upon. I think I was really like gung-ho about it and started like pumping out some resources pretty early on. And now that I've started my doctorate, it's kind of all slowed down a little bit. But yeah, I'm hoping to continue adding more to it.
Well, that just goes back to the whole balance piece, right? When you had the time, you were working on it, and now you have some other responsibilities, and so you're not able to do as much as you would like, but it's finding that balance in order to be able to accomplish the tasks that you want to get done.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right. If people want to find out more about you, if they want to check out your website, where can they find you?
So my website is www.bewellbalance.com. And then my Instagram handle is @bewellbalance.
Okay. All right. Are you ready? Are you ready for the final question?
Yes. Maybe. I don't know.
If you could only have one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
So tough. Yes, I knew you were going to ask this question since you ask it in every single one of your episodes. And so I've always been thinking about it. And it's still just like, it's so difficult for me because I feel like OT can represent so many different things to different people. But if I were to try my best to tag one word to it, I would say empowering. And I say that because I feel like one of the most important things that we can do as an OT is empower our clients with the knowledge, the resources, the tools, the strategies, whatever it is, to live fulfilling and meaningful lives despite whatever they're going through. So despite any physical or mental challenges they're facing or life transitions, I think it's really critical that we are able to empower them to the best of our abilities.
I absolutely love your word choice. I think that is such an amazing word, such a powerful word, as you might say. Oh gosh, this has been so much fun having you on the show today. I have to say, just dropping some serious knowledge bombs here of how we can better manage our time, better manage our stress, and like I've said many times before, maintain a balance within our lives. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Brynn.
Thank you for having me. I wouldn't have imagined 2.5 years ago when I first met you as my fieldwork educator that we would be doing this today.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are 3 easy ways to let us know. 1, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
What's that word when you're, I don't even know, you're like,
I feel like relating your feelings to
other people?
Projecting?
Yes, thank you. So I feel like, what was I going to say? See, I already forgot. This happens. this will happen a lot on my end. Not just articulate it on the broad. That's what I was going to say. On the blog. Okay. Ready?
Yeah. Yes, I apologize. I like my Wi-Fi has been a little spotty.
What are you saying?
Are you joking with me?
Yeah, you didn't say I'm sorry. You said I apologize.
Oh. I have noticed that when I'm trying to not say I'm sorry, I swap it with I apologize, which isn't any better.
But yeah, it's hard. It's really, really hard to get out of
it's
your vocabulary.
It's easy to catch when you're typing because then you can just delete it.
Yes. But how do you define, how do you find, oh my gosh. La, how do you find? No.
Okay, let me think what I said. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I forgot where I was going. Oh, goodness.
What's the word I'm looking for? The like the things we should be doing. Oh, what is that called? The techniques, I guess. I lost what I was gonna say. It was so good and I totally lost it.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. Do it. That 3. That's 3. No, is that 3? Yeah, I think that's 3.
I feel like I'm all my thoughts are so like I know what I'm trying to say and I can't say it.
It's the story of my life. Yeah. I do it. I do it all the time. All the time. And it's fine. Everyone I talk to is like, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed. Yeah.
Sorry. Hold on. Let me, I don't, I'm trying to think of.
We're even now. It's 2-2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, I think it's really, sorry.
You just said sorry too. We're 1-for-1 right now. Sorry. Oh, I just said it. Now I'm due. Oh, darn. I caught myself, though. I only said sar.
I was going to say excuse me. I think it's better, though. Isn't that better?
Excuse me.
I was clearing my throat. The right word? Syllabi?
Syllabuses.
Syllabuses? Syllabi?
Syllabi.
Syllabi. What am I trying to
it's
say?
It's also really hard to record like, on Friday. Like Friday afternoon for me, my brain's like, meh.
I was going to say something and now I don't remember.
I rubbed off on you.
This is, sorry, this is kind of related. Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.